Well, we come now to a small little three-verse psalm, but this little psalm is very powerful. Charles Spurgeon said it's one of the shortest psalms to read, but one of the longest to learn. We need this psalm. We need the challenge and the comfort that comes from this psalm. Every one of us needs to be weaned away from every source of pride that we have, and that is why this psalm is designed to do. Pride is a subtle and sneaky enemy. It creeps in as quickly as a snake and can do poisonous damage. The pride of life is a spirituality killer and is a threat to all. There are times when we can get caught up in trusting something other than God. We can trust in the dollar. We can save or invest and have a few positive things happen financially, and we can become so full of ourselves. But the truth is, we can hoard it and store it and be proud of it and have it melt away in an instant. We can really trust in a person who seems to be so powerful and positive, only to have that person fail us. We could begin to trust in ourselves and fall into the trap of self-exaltation. We want to be appreciated and seen and known, and people can actually manipulate themselves into public positions, not necessarily to do the will of God, but out of a motive of secret pride. Psalm 131 is a psalm of David. If ever there were a man who could have been proud of accomplishment and achievement, it was David. One of the most dramatic stories in all the Bible that people still talk about today was the time when he single-handedly walked into the middle of a valley with thousands of eyes on him and dropped Goliath. David eventually became a powerful and exalted king, but David learned the great secret of what makes one a giant spiritually. It's the secret of humility. In Psalm 131, he writes on that theme. Psalm 131 describes the kind of life and kind of existence one has who is right with God. There seems to be a connection between Psalm 130 and 131. The phrase, "O Israel, hope in the Lord," occurs in Psalm 130, verse 7, and also in Psalm 131, 3. Psalm 130, as we saw, deals with crying out to God for forgiveness when one has been in the depths of sin. The believer fails, but then cries out to God for his cleansing grace. And the results of experiencing God's cleansing grace are found in Psalm 131. One who is truly right with God has a spirit about them that shows that. The point of the psalm is this: when one experiences the forgiveness of God and is in a right relationship with God, it will manifest itself in certain humble realities that demonstrate that. And what is described here is one who has a right relationship with God. What we see here is a mature spirituality that obviously fears God and has a right perspective of things. It's a difficult thing to write about humility. It's a humorous account of one who tried to write about his own humility and needed to choose a title for his book about humility. He narrowed it down to three choices: humility and how I attained it, or how I became very humble, or me and my humility. He decided on the last title, and when he mailed it into the publisher, it included 12 full pages of pictures of himself. You see, humility is a very difficult subject to discuss because most of the time, the moment we discuss it, we don't have it. Well, David had it. It's a psalm of genuine humility. We do not know what prompted David to write it. Contextually, it perhaps due to the fact that David had experienced the remarkable forgiveness of God and wanted to write about lessons he learned about being right with God. Notice how the psalm begins, "O Lord." So David begins by talking to God as the sovereign. "I am Jehovah, the covenant God of Israel." David begins by realizing he is in a relationship with the glorious, sovereign, self-existing God. That would be enough to humble anyone. And there are multiple passages that teach us pride is a barrier to God. Psalm 138, verse 6, "God is near the lowly, not the proud." Proverbs 18, verse 12, "Pride is the fast way to destruction. Humility is the way to honor." Isaiah 57:15, "God is with those contrite and lowly of spirit." 1 Peter 5:5, "God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble." James 4:10, "Humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord, and he will exalt you." There are five realities that are evidenced by one that's right with God. First of all, my heart is not proud. Look at the first part of verse 1. O Lord, my heart is not lifted up. The word proud, gabah, refers to one who magnifies himself and holds himself up as a powerful mountain or tower. It refers to one who wants the highest part of even his heart. Proud people want to be seen as big and important. They're always looking and comparing and competing, and they are never content. They're always trying to outdo someone else because they want to be on top. If you see what's actually in your heart, honestly and biblically, there's nothing there of which to be proud. David was not proud. David was not high and exalted in his heart. Being a proud person or being arrogant or being loudly self-opinionated or having a lofty view of self that lacks humility proves one's lacks real spirituality. One who thinks this way and acts this way does not have peace with God or really with himself. We live in a world that tends to glorify and reward selfish, proud, arrogant self-elevation, but pride will never be rewarded by God. In fact, God hates pride in people. My eyes are not haughty. Goes on, my eyes are not raised up. We see that in raised too high. It's in verse 1, the second part. Proverbs 6, 16, 17, and Proverbs 30, verse 13 clearly teach that there is an arrogant, haughty, proud look in certain people, and you can see it. Pride is the problem of heart that often can be seen in the eyes. That word haughty is one that means to have eyes that are lofty, lifted up, and raised. There are two ways to detect whether one is full of pride: by their eyes, how they look, or by their speech, what they say. There are people who do literally walk around with haughty eyes. There are people who look proud and they strut around proud. They're full of themselves and puffed up in a bloated way. They're not right with God. He says, I do not involve myself in things too difficult for me. He says, I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. David did not involve himself or occupy himself with ambitions and schemes that were impossible for him to achieve. He did not involve himself in things he knew nothing about. There are people who want you to think they know everything about everything. They want you to think they are the authority. David had no problem admitting that there were those who knew more than he did. He knew there were those more knowledgeable in certain areas. He did not involve himself in things too difficult for him. One commentator said, We do need to identify what that mean. This does not mean. This does not mean one should be faint-hearted or spineless or mousy or unwilling to take on great challenges. The missionary William Carey, who was called the father of modern missions, preached a message in England in 1792 that he entitled, Expect Great Things from God, Attempt Great Things for God. It's estimated that the Bible translation work provided Bibles for 300 million people. So this is not a challenge to never step out in faith and take chances. The emphasis of this text is to stay out of matters that we have no business or skills in which to be involved. Know your limitations. Don't think of yourselves more highly than we should. There are people who are so arrogant and proud that they think they know everything about everything. There are people who are so haughty that they think they can take on any challenge and micromanage everyone and everything. This kind of person tries to take control of any situation, conversation, or any organization. This kind of person wants to be on center stage. They want the limelight. They don't even know what they're talking about most of the time, but they want you to believe they do. Someone does a great job and others think they can do it. It's a real application here to biblical things. There are people who think they can teach or lead doctrinal discussions when they have no idea what they're talking about. David was not a man like that. He was not afraid to say, I don't know, or that's way over my head. And one right with God does not do this. One right with God recognizes that God gives different skill sets to different people in different areas. And he composed and quieted his soul. Look at this verse 2. But I have calmed and quieted my soul like a weaned child with its mother, like a weaned child is my soul within me. He says, I have composed and quieted my soul. How did he do that? How did he quiet down his soul? By not being proud and by not meddling in things he knows nothing about, and by his relationship with God. See, a composed soul means David had a soul even, level, solid, character. A quieted soul means David had a soul free from turbulence and chaos. And that last part of verse 2, we learn, is that this is a weaning process. In a weaning process, the child breaks the dependency on the mother. This is what one must do to have spirituality. Break the dependence of pride on oneself. There's a guy named Dr. Gabeline who said, when a soul is weaned from all discontentment, ambition, self-seeking, pride, and selfishness, your soul is quiet and it does have rest. In order to do that, one must be right with God. And he has his hope always and forever in God. Verse 3, O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forevermore. Our hope is not in ourselves. It's always in the Lord. All of Israel needed to follow this pattern. Israel longs to be seen and esteemed as a nation of God, and one day she will be. We need to rest in the Lord. We need to be people that are known to rest in the Lord.